On school campuses around the country tomorrow, students are planning to take part in a walkout to focus attention on ending gun violence in schools. More than 2,500 groups have registered with the Enough National School Walkout. Here in Wisconsin, dozens of groups are officially taking part. We're talking about this youth activism this hour of the morning show, what it means historically, what it means philosophically. Sarah Stitzlein is a professor of education and an affiliate faculty in philosophy at the University of Cincinnati. Her recent piece for the website The Conversation is titled Teaching Students How to Dissent is Part of Democracy. Sarah, welcome to the program.
Good morning. My pleasure to be with you this morning.
Well, before we get too far into the conversation about what's happening this week, let's step back for a moment and look at the actions of the students turned activists in Parkland. It seems much of the impact of Emma Gonzalez and her fellow students is that they're not skeptical that they might not be able to affect change. And there was this one legal observer who wrote, the adults forgot to tell the kids at Stoneman Douglas that they can't win against the NRA. And Emma Gonzalez said, if you actively do nothing, people continually end up dead, so it's time to start doing something. The question would be, is it fair to say that we wouldn't be talking about a nationwide walkout movement or this conversation about gun violence if it hadn't been for these Parkland, Florida students?
I think that's absolutely fair to say. I think the students are leading this movement, and we've seen time and time again students rise to the occasion to speak out against injustice, problems in society. This is nothing new, and yet we're telling these students that, you know, why are they bothering to take on things like the NRA when we see a history of students indeed making significant impact in public policy.
How are these students at Stoneman Douglas doing something perhaps slightly different in the realm of activism?
Yeah, we're seeing, I think, quite a range of different approaches coming out of those students as well as students in high schools elsewhere. And, you know, some are jumping on buses and heading to state houses, and there they're engaging in some of the more kind of traditional avenues for change, so talking with legislators, proposing changes in law. But we also see kind of more public demonstrations, things like street theater, signs and protests and pickets, ways that people are getting attention in the streets and in front of their schools. And so I think we see students taking different routes to speak to different kinds of audiences, including some in Hollywood. You know, you see folks like Oprah and former government leaders like Barack Obama, who are responding to these students because they've tried all different sorts of avenues to be heard and to get attention.
So there is this national school walkout scheduled to begin at 10 o'clock in every time zone, lasting for 17 minutes. Generally speaking, what's the thinking behind this event?
I think this is primarily a consciousness-raising event. This is an effort among students to say, We're worried, we're concerned about what's happening in our schools, we're concerned about our safety and that of other children, and this is an effort to acknowledge what happened in Parkland. So this is 1 month after the event that the walkouts are being scheduled for. Many of the students are acknowledging 17 minutes of silence as a way to pay respects to those who lost their lives in Florida. But it's a way to say this is not acceptable and to help draw the attention of media and other citizens to demand change, to spark conversation, to put something new on the table when it comes to gun legislation and school safety.
Well, the debate over whether or not students and teachers should be taking part in something like this is a bit polarizing. Why do you think this is something that's touched a nerve with so many people?
Yeah, it really has. Just yesterday, I was looking in my local newspaper, the Cincinnati Inquirer, and they've actually listed how every school in our community is responding. Are they allowing protests? If so, what are the parameters they're putting on the protests? And if they're not allowing protests, are students going to do it anyways? And it was fascinating yesterday to look at the array of comments amongst the general public who weighed in on this story. You know, some seeing this as a great example of students stepping up, becoming active and engaged citizens, taking on real significant issues in society. Others seeing this as just inappropriate, a waste of time, that students should be in the classroom, you know, learning rather than out in front of their schools protesting. I think this is getting at a history of the role of youth in society, where some see youth as budding citizens who are entitled to these types of experiences to nurture their growing citizenship skills, while others see this as superfluous to the real purposes of schooling, which they may see more aligned with kind of getting back to the basics and preparing themselves for jobs in the economy.
Sarah Stitzlein is with us. She's an education professor and an affiliate faculty in philosophy at the University of Cincinnati. And we're talking about the protests tomorrow and youth activism in America. Are you a student or a teacher who is planning on taking part in this walkout tomorrow? If so, why? What role should schools have when it comes to teaching students about protest, dissent, and civic engagement? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Tweet us at WPR Mornings. Matt from Wausau emailed and said, as a longtime activist, I encourage my daughter to speak up for what she believes is best. Standing up in front of others and expressing opinions they might not agree with is how change happens. If the will of the vast majority regarding gun laws is ignored by the adults that are funded by the NRA, then let's give the children a shot. Sarah, what do you make of Matt's approach as a parent?
Yeah, I commend Matt for acknowledging the voice of his child and seeing that children have power, that they have perspectives, that they have something to say that's worth hearing, and that might differ from adults because of things like not being funded by the NRA, being separate in some ways from some of the responsibilities of adulthood. And so, you know, if we can give these children a shot, as he said, why not? Let them speak out. But I know that there are a lot of parents who aren't really sure how to do that, how to support children in those efforts. And I would point out for your listeners that there's some great resources out there that can help parents who are wondering, you know, what are children allowed to do, the kind of logistics of protesting, what kind of consequences they can face in terms of punishment in their schools, et cetera. For that kind of nitty-gritty how to get involved, there's a great new website. It's called Youth in Front. It's a resource written to answer those sorts of questions for teens and parents. It's authored by a collection of youth activists as well as MIT and Harvard scholars, including citizenship education expert Mira Levinson. It's a great resource I would recommend for him and other parents.
And you've been reaching back into the Vietnam era and how students were protesting then and how that might inform students today. What can you tell us about that dissent?
Sure. Well, the Vietnam era brought about a famous Supreme Court case, the Tinker decision. And this was a case where there was a brother, a sister, and a friend who chose to wear black armbands to school in order to acknowledge their disagreement with what was happening in the Vietnam War at the time. And they were punished for doing so. And their case went all the way to the Supreme Court, where indeed it was decided that students don't just check their political opinions at the schoolhouse gate, that they have the right to freedom of speech and expression in our schools. And what this case said was that, yes, students should be able to express themselves, but there are some reasonable boundaries we need to place on that expression. Primarily, we need to make sure that students aren't preventing other students from their opportunity to learn. So we can't have the kinds of protests that interfere substantially with the learning of other children. So right now, as students are preparing to walk out across the country, it's a great time to be reminded of the extent of how the right to free speech works in schools so that others are not distracted from their opportunity to learn, and yet those who want the opportunity to speak out should be granted that.
In the aftermath of the Parkland, Florida school shooting, the students at Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School have taken to TV, they've taken to radio, especially social media, to declare their intention to change gun laws in America. Part of that movement involves a national school walkout that's planned for tomorrow. We're talking about the youth activism, how it fits into the historical framework of activism here on The Morning Show. Sarah Stitzline stays with us. She is a professor of education and an affiliate faculty in philosophy at the University of Cincinnati. You can join in with your questions, your insights at 800-642-1234. Does a walkout accomplish what a classroom lecture cannot? Should there be consequences for students who choose to protest? Call in at 800-642-1234. Tweet us, WPR Mornings. The news update is coming up next here on the Ideas Network. The national school walkout tomorrow is primarily being organized by the students at Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School in conjunction with Empower. That's the youth branch of the Women's March. According to Empower, the goal is to raise general awareness for gun violence, both in and out of schools. We're exploring what this activism means for teens today, what consequences it may have on this generation of young people in society. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Sarah Stitzline is our guide in this discussion. She is a professor of education and an affiliate faculty in philosophy at the University of Cincinnati. She's been writing about students and dissent. Let's hear your thoughts on this national walkout and what it means to you at 800-642-1234. Are you a student or teacher who is planning on taking part in this walkout tomorrow? If so, why or why not? Call in or tweet us at WPR Mornings. Let's go to Steve, who is joining us from Sun Prairie. Hi, Steve. Good morning.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I just want to say I have two teenage daughters, and both of them do shoot, and they enjoy, you know, going to the rifle range and things like that. And they both said that they're not going to participate in any type of walkout. They both feel that they're being used by people, that they support people to have the right to own a gun, and they believe this is just a one-way ticket to try to get people to work to ban guns. And the older one actually wanted to wear an NRA T-shirt to school that day. I told her not to because we've been told by the school that type of thing is offensive and not allowed. I'm just wondering what the guest's position would be on, you know, my daughter being able to wear an NRA T-shirt. Again, I said no, but I'm proud of her for, you know, wanting to do that. But we're kind of stuck on how to handle that and what to tell her.
Steve, thanks for the question. Sarah, go ahead.
Yeah, that's an interesting one, Steve. You know, let me kind of come at this two ways. First, we know historically that when schools are responding to acts of violence, that there tends to be an effort amongst administration to kind of stamp out any potential insinuating things that might fire people up. And so there's this kind of stamping out of NRA T-shirts, of things that might upset students in the classroom. I don't think that's necessarily the best way to respond. Instead, I would encourage your daughters to think about how do they present their alternative view. If they disagree with the movement being supported in their school tomorrow to express concerns with guns and gun ownership and gun rights, figure out how to articulate that alternative. That's part of learning to dissent. Learning to be a citizen is developing an argument in support of your views. And if wearing a T-shirt is a way to start that conversation, I generally would support it, though I can see why the administration might want to shy away from the kinds of arguments that might result in the school tomorrow, in particular when nerves are quite raw and attention is on the loss of life in Florida.
Steve, thank you so much for the call. Paul from Eau Claire emailed and said, is it even fair to say these students are dissenting when they are just holding the exact same views of their teachers?
Well, I guess I'm kind of wondering how Paul knows that those reflect the views of the teachers. Certainly we have a lot of teachers who are who enjoy shooting, who own guns, who are proud supporters of the Second Amendment. Now, that's not to say that that is necessarily the view of teachers' unions. There is a teacher union-supported student protest going to be held on April 20th across the country, so certainly he may be seeing it reflected there. But the space of the classroom should be an educational one, where teachers are engaging in the ideas with their students, not just putting forward one and only one view, but rather allowing all types of students, including Steve's daughters that we just discussed, to share their counterpoints. So I would hope that it's not just teachers encouraging a specific view on gun violence, but rather a conversation about multiple perspectives on the role of guns.
Do teachers, are they in a sort of difficult position at this point with the protest tomorrow? Because, they're not supposed to express their views on political topics, and yet they too may be walking out with their students.
Yes, teachers are in a really tough spot tomorrow, particularly when some school administrations, school boards, have told teachers that they should not participate or support the efforts of students. And my heart goes out to those teachers, because in a lot of ways they're wanting to support the growth, the voice, the budding citizenry in their classroom by allowing them this space to speak, to protest, to demonstrate. And yet when they're being told that they can't endorse such activity, I fear that we're missing out on an educational opportunity where those teachers could be sharing information about how do we change laws when we disagree with them? How do we speak to elected officials? How do we work with the media to share our opinions? Those are valid educational opportunities for citizens to have. And so when teachers are being told to kind of almost ignore what's happening, to somehow kind of pretend it's not going on by talking with students about it, we're really missing out on an educational moment.
Yeah, because is there a difference between teaching dissent and actually taking part in it?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I think I want to be clear that I'm not saying that schools should require students to participate in these protests or walkouts. Rather, I'm saying that schools should provide students the know-how so they can choose to participate in dissent if they feel that it's warranted. So in class, students should be learning the kind of skills of dissent, things like consciousness raising, coalition building, the arts of persuasion, public demonstration, as well as how to use traditional government avenues for change. And they should be learning how to discern when protest is warranted, whether this is a valid cause for concern, issues of gun rights and student safety in schools. And then I think it's important to acknowledge that while we shouldn't be requiring students to do this, research does show us that those skills are more deeply understood and then they're later practiced as adult citizens if children actually engage in real, legitimate acts of dissent in school. That's actually pretty notable within the research.
Some school districts have sought less disruptive methods of protest. We're seeing reports that one school district in Nevada initially asked students to pursue other forms of civic engagement, like tying ribbons on school fences or observing moments of silence, as opposed to actually walking out of class. Another district in Virginia said students can either hold a student-led memorial service for the victims of the Parkland shooting or hold a student-led assembly about school safety. Why not encourage students to participate in a less disruptive method of protest?
Yeah, I generally can support the schools that are trying to suggest particular less disruptive ways. I understand that they're trying to keep students in the classroom, that they're trying to keep the focus on, traditional subject matter being taught at that time. It's really about what's achieved through the alternatives that those schools are putting forward. If some of the same goals can be achieved, so if it's about consciousness raising, helping others understand the significance of the problem of gun violence in schools, perhaps something like tying ribbons to fences helps others in the community become aware that this is a problem, an issue students are upset about. Or having an assembly about how do we change school culture? How do we reach out to loner students, those who might have a proclivity toward acts of violence, so that our school prevents future events? Those can be worthwhile activities. They can engage students in the kinds of conversations about how do we help others become aware and how do we put forward concrete suggestions for change.
If you just
are justified, and I'm happy to see some schools offering those as alternatives.
University of Cincinnati Education and Philosophy Professor Sarah Stitzline is with us. She's been writing about the role of dissent among students in a democracy and talking about activism the day before a planned national school walkout that is set for tomorrow morning, drawing attention to gun violence. You can join the conversation, 800-642-1234. Are you planning on taking part in this walkout tomorrow? If so, why or why not? What role should schools play when it comes to teaching students about protest or dissent or civic engagement? Join in the conversation, 800-642-1234. Let's go to Jeff now in Appleton. Hi, Jeff.
Hello, good morning. How you doing?
Doing well. Go ahead.
Just flipping through my Facebook, and I saw an interesting challenge for the kids that want to step out of class. I get it, and I support it. It is a good thing to see them engaged. But there's a challenge to step up and to step up to these kids that are eating lunch alone, the kids that they don't know, say hi. The kids that are eating lunch alone, invite those kids to eat lunch with them. To bring those kids, the loners, the ones that are doing this, to bring them into the fold, bring them into the groups, and to do their part, solving this problem of gun violence in schools is going to take a lot of people accepting a lot of responsibility for things. And I think that's a good place for the students to also look at what they can do to help with this problem.
Jeff, thank you for that offering. Sarah, go ahead.
Yeah, Jeff, I've been seeing that on my Facebook feed also, and I think there's something valid there. There's something to be said about how we change school culture and how we reach out to those on the fringes, those who are marginalized, those who face bullying and other problems in our schools today, and that having these types of conversations in our schools is a way that we can attune students to injustice within their own school settings, helping them see how they may even contribute or be complicit in ostracizing certain students, and then giving them the challenge to say, how could you do this differently? How could we be more inclusive and supportive of all of the students in our school, showing support for each and every individual so that we head off some of these potential problems in the future and so that we really make a better functioning society as a whole? That is certainly an educational opportunity for children to engage in and discussions about changing their own schools and their own behavior.
Let's go to Barry now in Rice Lake. Hi, Barry.
Hi. I was listening before, and I appreciate the teacher's position, but what you were talking about them teaching in the classroom or participating in this, they could do that at an extracurricular level, but they can't do that in the classroom. It's not their position to decide what is. They need to enforce the school rules. And, for example, if they can't go outside and they can't leave the classroom, they can't say, go ahead and do it anyways, because where do you draw the line on the topic? It's got to be very cut and dry. They are professionals, they are employees, and they're there to do a job. After school is one thing. But in school, they need to enforce the policy. If a teacher walked out with a bunch of students that are under the age of 18 without permission slips, that teacher should be disciplined severely for it. I mean, they can't do that. That's not their job.
Barry, thanks so much. Sarah, policies are there for a reason, Barry says.
Yeah, and it seems that Barry's mostly concerned with the teachers, if I understand him correctly. Not necessarily the students walking out, but the teacher's role in this. Yeah, this one, again, it's a little tricky. There are policies that guide teacher behavior, what teachers are allowed to do in schools, and by contract, teachers are required to follow those. And yet, at the same time, the overarching guidance of what teachers should be doing is about educating children. And we know the most long-standing purpose of schools in the United States is the development of good citizens. Again and again, every year, national polls are taken amongst parents and community members to say, what do you value most as the purpose of schooling? And it's citizenship development. So if teachers are going to fully reflect and embody that commitment to developing good citizens, that may mean that at times they may need to challenge those policies if they feel that the education that results for children is warranted. If this is a genuine, significant opportunity to develop citizenship skills, then that might mean walking out of the classroom or pushing the boundaries of those policies.
Some school districts have threatened to suspend students who walk out, and certainly participating in any kind of protest carries a risk of consequences. But is part of what we're talking about here getting kids to understand that risk and making decisions to partake or not partake, knowing that information, knowing that there is some risk?
Yes, absolutely. A significant part of being a good, effective dissenter is realizing what risks are on the table and knowing how to weigh those with their benefits and their potential consequences. And so part of this educational opportunity that I keep referring to is engaging students in such a discussion. What consequences might they face personally? What consequences might their school or other children elsewhere face? And then choosing whether or not action is justified. This is what adult dissenters do every day when they choose to speak out or to voice alternatives. But I think it's important that we also remember what punishment is and is not valid. Generally speaking, students should not be suspended for participating in a walkout. The ACLU, for example, has some helpful guidelines on their student rights website about this. Sanctions less severe than suspension are typically used for first-time offenders or for absenteeism. So really, the punishment can't be more severe than what would be given for a typical unexcused absence in the school for choosing to walk out.
But in this era with social media, dissent is a lot more difficult to reinvent later in life if someone's opinion changes. This is different than where it was with Vietnam War protesters. Is that something that students should really keep in mind when deciding whether or not to take action? This will follow them.
Yeah, that's an interesting point, Kate, and one that I have been thinking about in terms of a significant number of universities across the country have issued statements about whether or not they will make admissions-based decisions on students who have been punished, whether that be expulsion, suspension, et cetera, for choosing to engage in political dissent around this issue of gun violence. Many universities have openly said, we will not hold that against students. And I think what that admissions decision brings to the fore is for these teenagers to think about, wow, I have some really significant things on the line here, whether I'll get into college, how I'll be looked at years from now. And when social media kind of inscribes that into the historical record, children need to think a little more carefully about what those actions might mean now and in the long run.
Sarah Stitzline is with us, professor of education and an affiliate faculty in philosophy at the University of Cincinnati, talking about youth activism today. And that's before tomorrow's planned national school walkout. You can join the conversation, 800-642-1234. We'll get back to it after the latest news right here on the Ideas Network. The activism we're talking about surrounding tomorrow's planned national school walkout is not a one-off event drawing attention to gun violence. There are several more events planned in the coming weeks, including what's called March for Our Lives on March 24th, which will take place in Washington, D.C. There's another school walkout planned by the Women's March organizers on April 20th. What does this activism mean for youth today? How will the decisions and actions they take today carry on with them later in their lives? These are questions we're asking here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. University of Cincinnati education and philosophy professor Sarah Stitzline stays with us. She's been writing about the role of dissent among students in a democracy. Gathering your thoughts as well, 800-642-1234. Let's go back to the phones now with Rob in somewhere in Wisconsin. Rob, go ahead. Hi.
Hello.
Hey there. Go ahead, Rob.
My question is to all the students that are protesting is why? Do they have a focused reason? When my son came home and told me about it and said he wanted to participate, I asked him why. He said, so I can get out of class. And then he fought me a little bit. Then I asked him, I go, so what's your feelings on it or what's your point of view on it? And he didn't have any of that. So I'm wondering how many students are participating just to get out of class and not for a valid reason.
Rob, thank you so much for the call. And Sarah, I'm not sure if you were able to get all of that because of the line there. Rob asking his son, why? Why are you doing this? The son saying, to get out of class.
Yes, unfortunately, there are a significant number of children like Rob's son who simply see this as an opportunity to, you know, not do my math for a while, to step outside, stretch their legs, talk with friends, and aren't really necessarily focused on a specific message of change or of concern. And that is the case. We can't deny that. But I'm certainly not here to support walkouts as some kind of missing class or simple rebel rousing. Rather, you know, I'm trying to argue that we should be using this educationally. So we want to see teachers who are having conversations with students about why is this walkout happening? Is it justified? What should we be doing as a result? What are the particular changes students would like to see following this walkout? And hopefully, if children like Rob's son encounter those kinds of conversations, they can begin to articulate a reason for participating or not participating in tomorrow's events. That makes this opportunity one where children are learning and not just stepping out to simply get out of class.
Let's go to Todd now, joining us from Green Bay. Hi, Todd.
Hey, good morning. There's several different things that I was thinking about mentioning, and your guest swerved into something else that came to mind, and that is the whether or not colleges are going to be looking at student protest on a student's record or, you know, suspension for protest or something of that nature as an admission standard. And one of the things that I think that really needs to be considered that could have stopped this entire incident at Florida is the fact that this kid had no police record, although he had been reprimanded and, you know, referred to the police a number of times, and the police had a program in place with the Broward County Schools to ignore all of that. It was called the Promised Program. So the kid was able to buy guns with no record at all, and it would have stopped him in that case. The other thing I'd just like to mention is I just hope and pray that there's not some maniacs out there with guns tomorrow that are looking at all of these schools that are emptying out into the parking lots and the school grounds as an opportunity. And I'm just praying that does not occur to anyone, but I don't hold out a lot of hope. So I think it's a real public safety issue.
Sarah, is what Todd is saying here, is this a public safety issue?
Well, it certainly could be. There could be folks who could use this as an opportunity to bring more violence to our schools. But I think part of what the students are trying to raise is awareness that every day they're facing a public safety issue in schools that they feel are not sufficiently protected from gun violence. That's not to say that it's certainly not more difficult to get inside of a school to cause this kind of havoc than to fire at children who are outside of a school for a walkout or protest. There is risk here, and I know that some schools are trying to think creatively about how to minimize that risk by offering alternative spaces in interior courtyards, in gymnasiums, in auditoriums, spaces where students can speak and be heard, where media can access students to speak with them and to share their views, and yet try to dissuade or prevent situations where further harm might be caused.
Well, whether they like it or not, parents will be thrust into the position tonight where they'll likely have a conversation, a serious one, with their teenager or their child about topics like protest and dissent and what a walkout is. What would you encourage parents to tell their kids when it comes to participating in tomorrow's day of action?
Well, that's a good question. I think something we've heard repeatedly throughout our conversation this morning is talking about potential consequences that children might face as a result, whether that could be punishment in school, whether that could be a lasting record in terms of preparing for college and other careers in the future. But more importantly, I think parents need to have the big picture conversation about the meaning and the role of protest in democracy, how it's worked to improve life in America historically, perhaps highlighting some major figures here and elsewhere who have effectively changed the course of history by speaking up. And of course, I mean people like Martin Luther King, but also student activists, those who sat at the Greensboro lunch counters, those in Tiananmen Square who fought for democracy. Help those children see what dissent looks like in action so that they understand what they're getting themselves into and how to do it well, in hopes that they can have a significant impact and that this might be an initial foray into active and engaged citizenship as an adult.
Let's bring in Caitlin with a comment in Madison. Good morning, Caitlin.
Hi. I had a comment about the argument that was used earlier that an alternative form of protest would be to discuss how to bring these isolated students into the fold and to make them feel more included and part of things. And I really think that that's wrong. It's a form of like victim blaming, because it's really not these students' responsibility to keep themselves safe in this way, and it really distracts from the purpose of these protests, which is gun violence. And there's a level of irony as well, because there are these adults who are saying children shouldn't have a voice, they shouldn't make laws, yet they should be the ones that prevent these tragedies from happening. I just think it's a really a bad road to go down.
Caitlin, thanks. Sarah, go ahead.
Caitlin, that's an interesting point, and I think I'm generally on board with what you're saying there. I think what I was trying to highlight is that there's an array of different ways we can be approaching this, but that is not to say we should be silencing the central thrust being about gun violence, gun legislation, and the role of guns in American culture. That's really the heart of what most students participating in these walkouts are trying to draw attention to, and I think that's where the focus should be. But as for the Facebook and other memes that have been floating around suggesting that the focus should be more on students reaching out to others, in some ways that may be victim blaming, and it may be putting additional unwarranted responsibility on children to be changing the conditions in their schools rather than preventing the influx of guns and gun violence. So Caitlin, you're on something there. I think that's precisely the kinds of conversations that should be happening in our schools, talking about the problems amongst the different proposed ways to speak out tomorrow and what those might be.
Sarah, what legal rights do students have should they choose to protest tomorrow?
That's a good question. There's a strong history coming out of Supreme Court cases. I mentioned the Tinker case earlier that allows students to engage First Amendment free speech as long as it doesn't interfere with the learning of other children. Other cases, the Hazelwood decision, which is about students, what they can say in newspapers. And what we see in these kinds of cases, the most recent one being Morris versus Frederick in 2007, which was students speaking out about illegal drug use, what we see the court saying again and again is that children have valid social and political views, and that it's important that they learn how to civilly exchange them in educational settings. So this is an opportunity to do that, but students have to realize that as they do that, they cannot keep other students from the right to learn traditional subject matter, the normal routine parts of day-to-day life in classrooms. So they have to be judicious about how they use school time and resources. They can't, for example, hand out flyers about gun use and gun violence in the middle of math class. They can do it in the lunchroom. They can't do it in a time that distracts the learning from others.
What will you be watching for when this walkout takes place tomorrow?
I am watching for the reasons. I'm hoping to hear students who can clearly articulate their concerns about their own safety, the safety of others, their concerns about the role of guns, what we should or shouldn't be doing about the Second Amendment in our country. Part of doing good dissent is not just complaining. It's not just about getting onto the news. It's about putting forward viable alternatives, ways that we can improve and change society. And I'm curious to hear what the kids have to say. What do they think we should be doing? How could we be doing things better when it comes to our use and value of guns in America?
And finally, as we wrap up, what about the discourse and the debate that follows a protest like this?
Yeah, I'm actually hoping that it continues. I think possibly one of the worst things that could be happening is if this is the end, if this just marks a once-and-for-all event and then we step away from it without continuing the conversation and continuing to nurture our upcoming citizens. I'm hoping that this is a beginning of showing students how to speak out, how to get involved in political life, and that this particular example of gun violence is just one of the many ways that children will move forward in becoming active citizens.
Sarah, thanks so much for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Sarah Stitzline is a professor of education and affiliate faculty in philosophy at the University of Cincinnati. Her recent piece for the website The Conversation is titled Teaching Students How to Dissent is Part of Democracy. This hour of the morning show was produced by Chris Molina with technical production from Michael Deringer. Michelle Johnson is executive producer. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and this conversation comes to you on the Ideas Network.